Good morning, Mike.
Citizen lobbyist, right on time, calling in.
Well, I heard the whistle. What does that mean?
You know, I had that feeling that that might have been the prompt.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
You know it's 8 o'clock.
So, how are you feeling today? Because I saw you at the Alaska State Fair yesterday, and you've been out there a number of times. This is day 8 of the fair coming up.
Wow.
And hard to, you know.
Well, I spy, except for the people that are working out there every single day, 12 hours a day, I'm sure.
Oh, right. And there have been some crowds on the weekend, and then there have been a fewer people coming, in part, I think, because it was a weekday and people do work and do other things. But so far, we have a number of things we could talk about. But what's your overall impression of the fair? You've been out there more than once.
So the fair is amazing this year. I mean, I'm a huge supporter of the fair. It's easy for me to do that probably because I live so close and I go buy a season pass every year, which is a huge savings for people in case they've not gone down that route, and have my parking pass. And I just kind of try to get there just about every day of the fair. And I swear this year I'm seeing different things every day I go there. I think there's a lot of new vendors. As far as smaller little kiosks that I haven't seen before. I think there's maybe one or two new food vendors, but they've got such an amazing display of food out there already. I mean, you probably have talked about this week, that the Food Network has been out there filming during the week, several of the vendors, for a carnival food special they're going to be doing. And reportedly, we have some of the best fair food in the country because we don't have any chains in our food menus. It's all little small businesses, and which is kind of unique, that I'm told, on these big state fairs. So all in all, Mike, I think it's been a great year. And I hope people that haven't gone will still get out there. You know, the one thing I think it's underreported about it is that and I think I did see a little blurb on the news last night about the cost of going to the fair. But, you know, between Costco and the great deal you can get for tickets there, four tickets, I think, for $40, or you get them ahead of the year and get a pass like I do, or go, you know, during the week. Once you get into the fair, Mike, we're one of the few fairs that allow you to bring food in. So if you really don't want to spend money on food, you could actually bring a little picnic, and there are a lot of areas that you could sit with your family and have a picnic and maybe just have one or two special things. There are several days that they have rides that are 2-for-1, and the music venues are amazing. They're all free. Of course, the concert tickets are extra, but often there are giveaways for that. But so all in all, I think that our nonprofit fair does an amazing job, and I hope people get out and support it. I think we may see a little bit of a result on the downturn of the economy this year. I haven't seen quite as many people during the week than we normally do, but then we've had some weather challenges too. So all in all, I give it a big thumbs up, Mike. And bonus, it's the only smoke-free fair in the country, with all the smoking areas being put outside the gates now, which has been just amazing. So kudos to the fair.
Right. That's all. I think something I would underline and say I'm pretty much in agreement. And what I've heard, because we are out there broadcasting every day from noon to 5, we get a chance to interact with a lot of people. And I absolutely, people have memories. That's something I have picked up on. People have memories of having been at the fair when they were younger, have been coming for 20 or 30 years. And in some cases, those food vendors you mentioned have been there for all of that time. And so when something comes through the gate, they have certain foods that are their specialty, whether it's oysters or whatever, and potatoes of a certain sort. People, I think, have established the relationship to the fair. And there are certainly newcomers. There are people who have not been here before. But I see a lot of people each year, year after year, that I have seen coming to the fair. So that's that part of it.
Right. And I think, you know, also it's for some of us that have lived here 40 plus years and lived in various parts of the state, I run into people that I haven't seen in years at the fair and probably only see once a year. So You know, it used to be the way that we used to be at the Anchorage airport when you used to see everybody you knew, or the Seattle airport. You don't do that so much anymore. But now I always see people that I know that live in Anchorage or around the country. It's the biggest, arguably one of the biggest draws of the whole year of, what, 350,000 people usually, or 300,000 people?
300,000, so. Roughly, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So yesterday was a special day. There was one venue that was jam-packed, filled, sold out, and that was at the Borealis Theater location right next door. There's a big tent, a very interesting tent that's used for a variety of different things. And yesterday, as is typical, the Palmer and Wasilla Chambers had a joint meeting there. And when they do that, they typically have someone who is prominent as a keynote speaker. And this year it was none other than senior U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. You were there. I was there. What did you think? Because now we segue a little bit into our political observations.
Well, I think she got a good reception from the chamber. As you said, a sold-out crowd. There were several legislators in the crowd, along with elected officials and then chamber members and just members of the public that were there and interested to hear. First chance, really, people of the Valley have gotten to hear from her since her historical vote on the health care bill. And she didn't disappoint, I don't think. She kind of went through what she normally does and gives sort of a D.C. catch-up of things that she's working on, committees that she's working on. But I think she saved the best for last when she talked about her vote, why she voted it that way, why she in this enormous support she's getting from Alaskans for her vote, turning down what was the last what they called the skinny health care bill that would have really gutted the ACA, and her hopes and plans for moving forward and getting something that addresses costs in Alaska. That has been her concern, not just the bad the way that the bill was rushed through and crafted behind closed doors and no committee process. She certainly had a problem with that, but also the fact that it didn't do anything to address the costs in Alaska. And she talked about, you know, some of the things that she's doing, working across the aisle, working with other legislators, sort of her polar opposites. She mentioned the name Ted Cruz being one, seeing where they can find some common ground. And she knows she's got her work cut out for her when she gets back, but she's done her homework. And if you've been following since they've gone on recess here, she's been all over the state talking to Alaskans about this. So I thought she gave a great presentation.
Well,
the tent was a little bit noisy because of the wind, and there wasn't a lot of time for questions at the end. The one question that was asked that she answered, and I thought she dutifully did that really well, was, and one I hear a lot, is why don't we just allow insurance companies to sell across state lines? That'll fix the problem. Well, it won't. And she explained why, the reasons behind that, and how, you know, Alaskans are a special case because of our high costs and our high problems, actually, and our that we really aren't an attractive entity for anybody to want to join in their across state lines. That's not going to fix it. Although she knows there are some other things that are creative that can be looked at. She talked a lot about how good our native healthcare system was and the other healthcare systems. I had worked on in a booth the day before, and somebody came up to tell me that they had to stop into the veterans care here in Anchorage, and they were from Connecticut, and they were wowed by how well it went there, and they were very impressed with the care they were getting for veterans here in Alaska. So that being said, I think she did a good job. What was your take on it, Mike?
Well, I believe that the crowd, and there was a wide spectrum of people there, you've described them, and they certainly gave her a standing ovation before she began and afterwards. Yes. I think she once again demonstrated that she is a speaker that connects with her audience. That was my impression. And I thought she also was quite capable of sharing the historical perspective that many people who've been in Alaska for a while understand, and perhaps people who have been here less long need to hear about. because she grew up in Southeast Alaska, and she did a very nice job of pointing out that back in the day, a long time ago, when there were not as well-developed health facilities here in the state, people would go, particularly from Southeast to Seattle, for most everything. As facilities developed, and I thought that was a very important point, and I noticed that there were representatives from a number of the institutions here, the regional hospital, et cetera, listening to this. She was pointing out that the facilities are now here, but the insurance companies in particular seem to be encouraging people to go, once again, to Seattle for procedures because it costs less to send people there and have the procedure rather than do it here. And that illustrates, I think that was a very compelling description that helped people understand her main point that I took away, which was that the issue right now may be how do you provide insurance and payment for healthcare, but the underlying foundational element was healthcare costs are rising so quickly. How do you control them? Because if you don't do that, then we're all spiraling out of control here.
Right. And she also brought out part of that, Mike, is the transparency in it, that no one up here was ever able to find out to comparative shop whether, you know, what a knee replacement was going to cost here as opposed to going to somewhere else to have it done, and that that needed to be worked on. So I, you know, she is an amazing listener. She stayed there in the venue, which until almost the last person was gone. I stayed and talked to her. There was a line waiting to talk to her, and she stayed and talked to, there weren't very many people left in that tent when Senator Murkowski left. And she spent the day at the fair listening to people. She has a booth there, of course, but she was walking all over the fair, so she was pretty accessible. She told me that she had heard nothing but good support from people across the state about her decision to vote that way, and it was, you know, certainly made her feel better about her vote, but that she was hearing nothing but good from Alaskans, so I was glad to hear that as well.
And we had the opportunity to have an interview with the senator. She came over to our booth there in Raven Hall, and Judy Getty did the interview. And I agree. She was willing to sit down and talk about what she was doing in Alaska, talking about the other aspects. She had already, in her presentation, keynote presentation, had covered a lot of ground. But she was very comfortably able to spend some time there and talk with people who came by the booth. And I think that being accessible and not only saying what she believed, but listening, I think that, you're right. That's a hallmark of someone who is going to be able to take input and put that into the whole mix. And she's got a busy schedule when she goes back on Monday to D.C. and they start right after that with all of the hearings, et cetera. I think the point she made and illustrated was that there will be people from Alaska who will be testifying, and that this will be a much more transparent and open process as they move forward to see what can be done with health care.
Yeah, she has her work cut out for her, Mike. I think they have 12 days once they get back to not only address this and try to figure out how to shore up the marketplace, but also pass a budget, which is going to be quite a challenge. So she is going to be very busy. I love that she said in a very Alaskan way, but tomorrow she was going hunting.
Right.
And so she was off today to go hunting, but she'll be back in D.C., and there'll be a flurry of activity after the holiday for sure.
Okay. So we were talking that we've been talking about someone who is occupying a very central role in Washington, which is significant. In the past, we've talked about Senator Ted Stevens, who for a long time was a big player in the Congress, and I think it's arguable that Senator Murkowski is moving in that direction.
Yep, Matt, I definitely think that people all over the country know who she is now, right. And that certainly elevated her position. So let's talk about next week a little bit more for the Assembly too.
Let's do that.
There is an Assembly meeting next Tuesday. I'm having trouble pulling the amendment, the agenda up. Normally, it's right up there on Thursday, so they may have some web difficulties. I sent an email off to the borough this morning to let them know that it wasn't showing up, because normally it's Thursday.
Right.
It's posted for a Tuesday meeting, so we can look for that. But we do know from some introductions last week or 2 weeks ago, Mike, when we had a meeting, that they will be taking up things like setbacks and screening easements. They're going to be doing some amending of definitions and eliminating some language on that. And then just a handful of other things, nothing too earth-shaking, but there should be an agenda up, hopefully later today, if people want to check on it.
And of course,
and then there'll be a school board meeting, I think, the day after. So
right.
I'm going to be busy next week.
Right, and that's in September. And then just to remind people that as we go through September, there will be two meetings for each of the bodies. But I suspect that there is also an eye being looked toward the future, because in the first part of October, we have an election. Which will affect potentially. It will definitely affect the assembly, because there's going to be one incumbent who is terming out. That's Assemblyman Culligan. So he's not going to be there anymore. And, of course, there's one other seat up as well, but with an incumbent, Mayfield, who could return or could not return. And there's implications for how things will go when that kind of thing happens. And then, of course,
right.
over on the school board, we also have some seats that are up as well there. So
yeah, Ole Larson, who's not challenged at this point, and Kelsey, I've forgotten Kelsey's last name. I'm sorry, Kelsey. There's another seat that is contested. So, yes, and also let's talk about the Palmer City election just real quickly, because
sure.
I did have a conversation with the clerk yesterday. I've been getting some questions about how is this going to play out, because this is going to be a very odd election, I say, because there's no ballot questions,
right.
Which means some places in the borough won't even really have an election. There'll be nothing to vote on. But here in the city of Palmer, we have a council, two seats up for the council, and also the city of Wasilla will have some council seats too, I think, in the mayor race. So in the city of Palmer, at least, people have been asking me, where do I go to vote? Is it going to be at the city of Palmer because there's nothing on the borough ballot, or what's going to happen? So talking to the city clerk yesterday, and I've asked her to put this on the webpage so I make sure I have it right and they have it right too, and people know, you will go to your normal precinct to vote. There will just be the city of Palmer there running the election, not... the borough won't be involved in that portion of the election, since there's nothing on the borough ballot for people that live within the city limits of Palmer.
Right.
If you want to vote early, however, and a lot of people do, you can go to the borough and you can vote for the city ballot will be there, as will all the ballots, actually. That's how they work it. So people can still go early to the borough to vote in the city election, but if they're and they will go to their normal precincts, just as they always do to vote for the city elections, it just won't have a borough ballot there.
It might mean that there won't be a lot of people flowing through there. And the important point I think that you made about early ones is, can you go to the city hall and do an early ballot, or must it be at the borough?
No, just the borough.
Right.
I'm told the borough.
Okay. That's important
yep.
point. Yeah,
that's what she told me yesterday. But again, I've asked that they put some type of sort of questions and answers about this election, because it is a little different, and put it on their webpage so that those questions are answered. Next year in April, Mike, City of Anchorage is going to go mail-in ballot, and
right.
I'm very curious to see how that works out, because it's certainly something the borough has looked at, and. You know, I think the cities will, too, because there's huge cost savings in it. So it's always good to let somebody else go first and figure out, you know, what all the kinks are. But it'll be interesting to see on that particular election what the turnout is and how it goes.
Right.
And just to circle back
briefly to the city of Palmer, two seats.
Right.
Two incumbents. There are no term limits for the city council. So we have Linda Combs and Brad Hansen running for their own seats. We have two contenders, and Sabrina Combs and Kenny Linden. And so this being a case where you're not running for a particular seat, what you're doing is saying whoever the two who have the highest vote get right. to sit on that council. So you could have same faces, totally different faces, or a variety of mixes.
And wasn't the last, was it the last election, Mike? There, it was only a few votes that really made a difference.
8 votes. Kenny Linden, right. I had run, and she was essentially defeated by Richard Best by 8 votes, and that took a recount or a review of the voting to make that happen. So, these races, when you're looking at having, it's possible to have a win for a seat with something on the order of 200. When you have four people running this way, perhaps 200 votes. And so I know that there were a number of the candidates that were there at yesterday's chamber meeting, and there are candidates that are out and about doing things. Signs will be popping up pretty soon. So there is some campaigning going on, which is a different situation than sometimes in the past when there might not be that many candidates.
Yeah, usually the real crux of the campaigning comes after the fair. So I would imagine people are going to get a little more, see them a little more, have some door knocking going on, that sort of thing. But normally speaking, they kind of let the fair get done and then they go to do that. So.
And speaking of the normal appearance of political figures at the fair, this is the odd year. This is the year when we don't have elections for the Alaska Senate and House and governor. And, of course, next year that will all change. So this year, although there have been some political appearances at the fair, I think it'll all change when they're in the last stages of that candidacy next year and they're heading toward November. You can expect to see next year's fair a lot more populated with people who are running.
I have seen several people, several legislators. Yesterday, of course, Elena Johnson, who is from our Palmer area, was there. It was her birthday, and she was there. I've seen David Wilson a few times now.
Yes,
actually,
that's true.
Senator Sullivan was at the fair Tuesday and stopped by the AARP booth that I was running, and I had a chat with him. So there has been.
They're coming Walker through. I'm just saying. I believe that in next year's fair, we'll see a much higher level of activity because people are going to be running.
Yep.
Well, Citizen Lobbyist, we're just about run out of time. Do you have any last comments before we finish?
Nope. I just encourage people to go out there and see the fair before it's all gone and just in the history books. We still, looks like the weather might be pretty good this weekend. The winds kind of died down. And so pack up the kids and even if you don't have kids, and go to the fair.
All right. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. We'll see you there.
All right.